Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. If there's one thing that none of us can avoid in life, it's the loss of a loved one. Regardless of how we lose that person, whether through death, ill health, enforced distance, or their choice to reject our love, loss can be both devastating and life-fracturing. Love and loss are universal experiences, and how we move through them can not only have a significant impact on our physical, emotional, psychological, and spiritual health, but even the entire trajectory of our life. Loss is inescapable, and when you're deep in the grip of it, you can feel like the loneliest person on earth. So how do we survive loss? From where do we get the strength to cope with the devastating emotions that invariably crowd in to fill the void left by a loved one's absence? Is there any gift in loss? If so, how does one let go enough to move beyond the pain and suffering to find it? Author Kimberly Smythe spent decades suffering the overwhelming grief and myriad painful emotions that followed her decision to give up her first child to adoption when she got pregnant at 16. Terrified at the thought of losing the love of her family, she chose instead to experience a different loss, a decision that in her innocence she never foresaw would lead to years of struggling to find a solution to the guilt, depression, grief, and self-recrimination that would follow in its wake. Her book, Letting Go Again, is a deeply personal story about her own experience. But in the telling, it nonetheless offers important insights about these universal themes and emotions, love, grief, loss, regret, and self-recrimination that we all encounter at some point in our lives. Kimberly Smythe, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Sandy, I really appreciate that beautiful introduction. Thank you so much.
Kim, your book, Letting Go Again, it's a powerful story of healing one's heart after love and loss. As I said, you made a mistake when you were 16. You didn't tell the father you were pregnant because you believed you were bad and it was your punishment, not his, and you didn't tell your family. Now, as I mentioned in the introduction, the focus of this conversation is not about the rights and wrongs of giving up a child for adoption, but rather it's about how we deal with the loss of love. Even so, it does help to provide a little context to your story. So could you tell us a little bit about that experience? Because as you say in the book, the decision you made then were made to keep love in your life, not lose it.
Oh, yes. Gosh, I think it probably is helpful to know that I was an Air Force brat, one of six kids. My mom took us to Catholic church every Sunday. So my world was a lot of rules, and that's how I functioned in my world. And to, you know, as I saw it and as it was for me at the time, to break all the rules and do the crazy thing called falling in love with a young man and opening my heart, and it, the idea of being pregnant at that age with that background was overwhelming to me. And so I made my decisions within that parameter. And there wasn't much room for discussion. I kind of did it all on my own, made all my decisions. And it was a very difficult time for me to get through.
And you made them to keep love in your life, not lose it, which I think a young 16-year-old, you know, probably would.
Yeah, I mean, even when I chose to break up with my boyfriend, who was somebody who, for the first time in my life, I found this person that I could share my heart with. And it's like the first time I really felt free. And I found reckless abandon in that. And it was a magical journey for me to go on. After being so shy and reserved my whole life. But when I broke up with him, I think I always thought we would get back together somehow. And and then having to give up my own child, which was, like you said, what I believed was my punishment. The more painful it was, the better I knew that I was doing what I was supposed to be doing, right? I was paying for a price for my sin. So it was very confusing, and it was a place that I found very, very few tools to find a peaceful way through, let's just say.
Was that the first time that you really experienced loss on a larger scale in your life?
My uncle had passed away when I was, I think, 12. But it was a conversation that was spoke about in the car, and my family really didn't talk about it. You know, we cried, and that was the extent of it. I didn't really have a good foundation of what that is to have someone in your life. And I mean, as a 12-year-old, I knew he was sick. I knew he had cancer, and I just never thought he would die because I had no frame of reference for what that was. I'd never had a death in my life before. So yeah, that was my background in how to walk through grief.
Now, you spent as many months as you could not telling your family that you were pregnant. And once you did, you know, once it became obvious, you refused to tell them who the father was. How did you cope with all of that? I mean, missing your boyfriend, knowing that you were living with, you know, lies, that you had deceived your family for so long, and then you had to go through the birth and giving up your baby.
Oh, gosh, yeah. My dad at the time was working with my boyfriend in the same office with my boyfriend's father. And the thought of my father, who was this, you know, Air Force fighter pilot walking into an office with the father of somebody who impregnated his daughter, was outside of anything I could even imagine. And so I compartmentalized everything. I decided, I think in my own subconscious even, of how I was going to function through this and how I was going to help everyone, whether they knew it or not. I was trying to help everyone through this impossible situation where I, once again, I had six brothers and sisters, and I was 16 years old, and I knew I wasn't able to bring a child into my home. And to be honest, I never even went there because that was so outside of what I knew. And I think I thought, just like any other 16-year-old, where you put out the fires and you don't realize the ramifications of what you do. You just kind of are just walking through something impossible and hoping that, like you said before, my family would still love me. So that was how I went through it.
One of the things that struck me in your book was, you know, how many of our decisions in life are made because we're afraid of losing love or respect or disappointing others' expectations of us in some way?
Absolutely. You know, I think we all want that feeling of belonging in our life. And like I said before, meeting this young man was such a glimmer of who I was as a person, and to have to let that go and dive back down into the world that I really knew, which was to be basically a voyeur in my life, to search for safety in my not sharing my grief and what was actually going on inside of me, you know, the growth of my child and kind of the death of my personality and my happiness. And It was such a confusing and difficult place, but I think because I had been such a loner, it was easier for me to close the door of my heart, if that makes any sense.
So a decision made for love ended up with anything but love, because if you closed the door to your heart.
Yeah. And that was my survival, right? I don't think I could have walked through having to give up, like I said before. I mean, I thought really, truly that this was a timeout between my boyfriend and I thought that strangely I was, you know, this is 1976 and I was the girl who got in trouble and it was my fault. It was my responsibility. It's very odd to think about that now, but that's where my head was at. It was the girl's fault. And so I felt like I was doing what I needed to do for everyone I loved, including my daughter, who I knew I wasn't ill-prepared to be her mother, and I never even considered her as my boyfriend's child, to be honest, which sounds really bizarre, but it's how I functioned through it.
How did you feel about the loss of the love of your daughter? How did you cope with that?
Well, after giving birth, I think I dove into postpartum depression and kind of walked out of the hospital without her in a state that I'd never experienced before. I just felt so separate, so devoid of any kind of normalcy. I thought I was now like branded, you know, that sounds odd, but I was barely 17 when I gave birth, and just walking through this robotic one step in front of the other feeling, thinking that I was doing the best I knew how for my child, because I thought she should grow up with grown-ups and people that knew how to take care of her properly and how to love her with all the love and things that she deserved.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest is Kimberly Smythe, author of the book Letting Go Again. And we're talking about healing your heart after loss. We'll be back after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Kimberly Smythe, now clearly your fear of losing your family's love did not materialize. So was that a relief for you, or did you feel regret that if you'd known that you wouldn't lose their love, things might have been different?
Wow. I think it's interesting because all I wanted to do was get back to be who I was when I became pregnant, because I really liked that person that I found within the relationship with my boyfriend. And, you know, she was fun and she was carefree. And I wanted to go back to that in a very naive way. I thought I could. And going back to my family's house, it was obvious that things had changed between my parents and me and my older sisters, who were the only ones who knew about my child. My brothers and my little sister didn't know. And so There was a wobble in my family life that wasn't there before. As much as I didn't want to see it, I knew it was there. And you make these choices, and then you realize reality kind of comes and takes away what you believed was going to happen. And that was hard. You know, there definitely was a wobble there.
Now, you went on to meet somebody else, get married, and have three children, and a successful marriage you've had. But over the years, the pain of that loss, which, you know, you talk about in the book, and you probably stuffed down a lot, began to emerge and get larger and larger and larger. Do you think that was inevitable because you stuffed it down, or do you think it was just, you know, unique to you that particular pain of loss just continued to grow more devastating as the years passed?
Yeah, I think when you don't walk through traumas in your life in wise ways and get help with finding out what that is, you can't help but have those wounds, whether self-inflicted or not, be something that is within the fabric of who you are. And I ran really quickly into the future, hoping to leave my past behind me. And it has a way of coming out. I mean, having my own children and bringing my son home was very much very mindful of the child that I didn't get to have that wonderful experience with. And you know, you have these passages of time, and watching my children grow made me very cognizant of what I had missed and how precious that was and how I would never have it. Grief is tough. It's tough, especially when you feel like you deserved the pain,
which probably most people feel, you know, guilt, I would think. If they lose someone through death, they usually get left, you know, guilt is there. Guilt is always there. I didn't do enough, you know.
Mm, yeah, we kind of do that to ourselves, don't we? We kind of find a lot of ways of really tormenting ourselves.
We do.
Interesting human experience we have here.
Now, your guilt, of course, you know, 18 years later, got to the point where you couldn't handle it anymore, your guilt, your loss, your grief, and you looked for your daughter. And against all odds, you were reunited with her. But things didn't quite work out the way you hoped. And once again, you found yourself having to let go and find a pathway through the loss of her for different reasons. I mean, how did that compare with the loss you felt first time around?
Oh my gosh, that is a great question. It might sound naive, but when my daughter turned 18, I really wanted to know that she was happy and healthy, and I wanted her to know that I would love to meet her. And so I sent out my information to the state of Hawaii where I lived. And for the people that know Hawaii, there's this big sense of family there. And so I kind of hoped that maybe we would have some kind of connection. And we tried for 18 years to find some way of having a relationship we both enjoyed. And it was really difficult for us. I think when you get energies of adoption and loyalty it's difficult to weave something where I think there was a lot unsaid between us rather than said. And so to lose her after trying for 18 years, and I think one of the reasons I tried for so long without having any kind of feeling that this was, you know, good for me, was because she lost her own mother when she was 19, and she had gone through trauma with an illness at a young age also. So in a way, I was there to try to help her because I understood, I think, at least in my mind, what it was like to be young and go through different things, but also very traumatic things. And then to lose her the second time was after I'd written the book. She was not pleased with my decision to continue and write it. And, you know, in the interim, during those 18 years of trying to get to know my daughter, I had gone to a deep depression and really joined the dark night of the soul at one point, because it was just too hard for me to have my daughter near me and not feel any kind of connection with her. And so I sought out help at that time, because I'm kind of stubborn. I always feel like I could do it myself. And when I found myself literally in the back of my closet, crying a cry and grieving for the first time 25 years after my child, I'd given her up. I knew I needed to get help. And so I did. I went and got help. And it was the best thing I could have ever done for myself and for my kids and for my husband. I mean, when you go through these things, it affects your whole life. And so I searched out a counselor, and she started me on the path of a spiritual journey, which I'm so grateful for.
I want to come back to that a little bit later in the show. I mean, you know, of course, this is an account of your own personal experiences as a birth mother, trying not too successfully to reconnect with the daughter she gave up for adoption. But, you know, what struck me in your book is there's a much bigger story here. And that's the one that raises fundamental questions about the nature of love and letting go and loss and how we deal with the pain, or how we avoid the pain. At what point did this larger story become apparent to you?
Oh, my gosh. Like I said before, I did not know and didn't believe I was worthy of any kind of healing around what I had done. You know, I mean, one of the best things I had ever done in my life was have children, and to tell the world that I also had made this other choice, and to walk through that with my child. You know, there's something that I think a grief of somebody who is still, you know, with us is more challenging in some ways than somebody who is no longer going to be in physical form. So I don't know. I mean, everything's difficult, but I think when I realized once again that I had fallen apart, I realized that the only way I could get through it would be to dismantle what I had allowed into my life, what I had allowed to believe about who I was. I think when you go through those kinds of things, you have to understand that it's a tough road, and to just put it in your back pocket and walk into life, it's going to come around again, you know.
So writing your book was a catharsis, in a way of looking at it, of finding your way through that pain. The book's very raw and honest, and you certainly don't sugarcoat your own behavior and reactions. Why did you actually decide to publish it?
You know, I had a need to do it. I had, like, I bought myself my own little computer and started writing, and it took me, oh gosh, probably 5 years to get to a point where I felt really good about what I had written, and seeing the process of what I had written and how, you know, brutal I was with myself, and you know, how at the beginning my first drafts were just really raw. You think it's raw now. It was raw. And understanding and going through that process of really starting to get a different perspective on the choices I made, the choices my parents made, the choices, you know, everyone around me. And I looked at that 16-year-old self that I was, and I really beat her up for many, many years, the choices she made. And so it took me a really long time to understand that I really needed to go back to that little kid that I used to be and find clarity and find what her true intentions were. So that was kind of...
Your book also challenges our perceptions about relationships and acceptance and surrender. And I think, you know, the different ways that we love and the different ways that we all deal with loss, is that, I mean, did you have a very clear idea of what you were offering people in terms of information, tools, strategies, things that might help others learn to deal with loss when you started writing the book, or did that emerge?
Oh, yeah, that was a process of going through many, many different variations of the book. The clarity that the writing gave to me and on top of my own spiritual work and you know, coming to a place where I felt like I had something to say that might be helpful to other people going through similar things. I mean, there are millions of birth mothers out there, but there are also millions of other things out there that cause trauma in your life. And I think especially when you're young, those are kind of hard to unwind because I heard someone say the other day, children should not be allowed to make adult decisions. And I think there's a lot of truth in that because kids kind of think pretty near time, right? So long-term decisions are a little tough on the teenage mind.
I don't think the teenage mind is capable of actually, you know, looking that far forward to think about consequences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how life might pan out. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with author Kimberly Smythe about how we can let go of the pain of love and loss. After the break, we'll hear some tools and practices that helped Kim reach a place of surrender, find peace within herself, and acceptance of what is. Stay tuned.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Kimberly Smythe, tell us about some of the tools and practices that helped you come to terms with loss.
Well, boy, it's been a long, long journey for me. After that dark night of the soul, as I talked about earlier, I went to talk to a spiritual counselor, and it was just really good to find someone for me to talk to, because I was able to talk to my husband, but there was really nobody else that wanted to hear about it. I mean, I went through a point where I would just blurt out stuff to people. I was like bubbling up with just all this anxiety and emotions that I had not dealt with when my daughter was living in the town that I was in. It was just, it was crazy. And then I would talk with her off and on for like 4 or 5 years, mostly when my daughter would come for a visit. She'd moved away from my town, and I needed that kind of grounding around being around her. And so that woman was super, super important to me. And she moved away, and I ended up seeking out more help with a friend of mine sent me to Mastering Alchemy and Jim Self. And I've worked with his tools for probably 8 years now. I still find a lot of strength in what I've learned going through Mastering Alchemy. So,
can you give us any details about that? You know, I mean, what was the most important thing that you learned from, I mean, Mastering Alchemy is a spiritual, what would you call it, a course, a body?
Yeah, it's a way of learning tools to navigate life in a more meaning, in a less reactive way. It's more like learning how to observe and make better choices in how you walk through your life. And you know, what really attracted to me to the work was, number one, it was kind of self-guided, and number two, I loved how he was always talking about you are big, not small. And it was very positive. We work on really feeling what the vibration and energy of words were, which I found very fascinating and fun. It was just basically a way of knowing myself, finding a way of getting back to who I really am. And it's a way of perceiving the world differently. And it's been such a magical journey for me to look at life in different ways. It changed my life.
You know, I've read that all pain comes from unfulfilled expectations, that, you know, we all have expectations, and in many cases they rule our lives, and we set ourselves up for disappointment with them and then judge ourselves harshly for it. I think that losing somebody to death is terrible, painful, you know. I mean, I would not minimize, you know, the loss, the grief, the pain there. But losing someone that you love dearly because they have chosen to not be in your life anymore must, you know, where does one find the peace with that? Because, you know, you lose someone you love and you always have the comfort of knowing that they loved you and you loved them. But when someone rejects you, you know, how do you deal with that?
Gosh, ultimately, yeah, the biggest traumas are your biggest opportunities, right? And took me a really, really long time to get to a point where I felt good enough about myself where the choices other people make are their choices. And yes, I've missed my daughter, but there's nothing I can do about what she chooses in her life. That's, she has her own journey. And to get to a place where I can say that without feeling regret and shame and guilt, and it's been a miracle in my life. Because, you know, Jim Self used to say a lot in our work, if you went back to that place in your life where you felt like everything went sideways, and you really looked at it, he said, I guarantee you 90% what you believe happened was not true. And I would hear him say that over and over, and I would just be like, but you don't understand. You know, I would sit there fighting with this idea, right, that I could actually go back and say, oh, my gosh, I did this. I let my own child go and live with strangers. I mean, that's how my thought process is as I got older, right? When at 16, I thought everybody who would adopt would be just the best parent ever, and then to find out that that actually isn't not true. And that's another hard thing for me to have gone through, is like, oh my gosh, they're not perfect. So, and I don't think anybody is, right? So, but I did, after many years, I did go back to that little young kid, that scared kid that I was at 16, who was just exploring who she was and opening her heart. And I looked at her and with different eyes, and I really looked at why she made the decision she made. And I realized that she was not intending to hurt the people that she ended up hurting. She only intended to hurt herself. And so I have a lot of, I found forgiveness around what I believed she had done wrong, you know, how I had made her this horrendous person. And I held that as part of me, right? Because, I mean, obviously she's part of me. So to let go of all the ideas of how horrendous I had been, because I looked at the truth of it, and the truth of it was I was really in my naivete at 16 years old, trying to save my parents from being the parents of the girl who got in trouble. I mean, the story in my head was so big and so complicated and so bizarre, but that's really what my heart was doing. And like we've said many times, the thought of losing the love of my family was just, I was doing everything that I could to not make that a reality. And if it meant, you know, going off the rails a little bit like I did, I did what I knew how at the time.
So what you're saying is that healing our beliefs, you know, are the stories that we tell ourselves around situations, you know, maybe somebody we love has died, and we fall into the self-blame, self-recrimination, the guilt game, you know, because, you know, we mustn't think ill of the dead. People go through an angry stage when they lose someone they love. But that's all because we're telling ourselves stories. We're telling ourselves stories about, you know, we make up stories about our own guilt, or we don't even know if we've got anything to feel guilty about. So healing our beliefs clearly is one valuable thing that we can do for ourselves. And forgiveness, I think, forgiveness for any guilt that we feel over something. It sounds as though that was a really important part of your process.
And to understand that everybody has their journey in life. And, you know, I wanted my child to have the best life ever. And it's what every parent wants, right? And so when I learned that, you know, things were not easy for my daughter, I took that on. You know, I took on anything I found to put in my back pocket and wear it like a big cloak of all the reasons why I shouldn't find true happiness. And it kind of is crazy when you really look at it that way, how we are conditioned to kind of take on things that we don't even know are ours and aren't 90% of the time. You know, I truly believe now that my daughter was a shining light in her parents' life. And that's what I live with. And they loved her and she loved them. And that's all I need to know. And to me, that's a beautiful story. But it took me a really long time to get there, you know, get to the point of what the real, true, simple reality is. And I think we get bogged down in, like you said, this idea of the story of, you know, what our part is in it. So
was there any moment that you can recall where, you know, and where you had a big epiphany that shifted things for you, shifted the way you looked at everything and allowed you to find some peace with it and acceptance?
Gosh, at one point my daughter had a son, and I would go and babysit, and I'll never forget this one time, because every time I would say goodbye to her, it was just so sad for me to leave not feeling anything, you know, from her, or not feeling like we had gotten anywhere. And It was kind of like being on a treadmill that never really got anywhere. And this one time I had spent, we went on a trip together, she and I and her husband and their son, and I said goodbye to each of them. And it was like the first time that I could remember actually being fine with how things were between she and I, and how I enjoyed myself, and how I wasn't second-guessing every single thing that came out of my mouth because I was afraid to offend her or to say, to go too far and, you know, try to claim her as mine or whatever it was, because it's kind of a minefield sometimes when you're dealing with somebody who didn't grow up with you and doesn't recognize you as who you believe you are in her life, right? So when I was able to turn away from there and feel good, It was like this super big moment for me. It was like, good job, Kim. You know, you it's taken you a long time to get here, but I knew when I was with her that my intentions were good and that I'm a good person. And you don't have any power over that, you know, other than that with somebody else. That's their choice whether they want you in their life.
You know, I'm reminded of something that once happened to me, and it was epiphany. And I usually don't share this. I've actually shared it once before on this show, but it seems very pertinent now. I remember a time when I was, circumstances separated me and somebody that I cared for greatly. And that's just the way it was. And then when I found out that he had another girlfriend later, it really hurt me. But then one day I just had this out of the blue, you know, download, if you like, an epiphany, where I understood that love, you don't have to do anything with love. You just have to feel it and allow it to be. And it doesn't matter whether someone loves you but can't be with you or doesn't love you anymore. The fact that you feel love in itself is enough. Do you feel that feeling love for your daughter, even though she may not be feeling that for you? We'll come back to that one after the break. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with author Kimberly Smythe about the universal themes of love and loss, covered in her autobiographical book, Letting Go Again. We'll continue that after the break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hi everyone, this is Shea Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shea Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Kimberly Smythe, is it enough for you to know that you feel love for your daughter even though she might not feel it for you? Is it enough for any of us to know that we have the love even though
the other half of it isn't there. What do you think?
Oh my gosh, your story was great. Thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, on the other side of love sometimes is such heartache and heartbreak. And I think it's super hard to even find a place where you can not find that within the realm of relationships. You know, relationships are super hard. I think what has helped me personally is to like myself again, to really work on my intentions and how I walk and what I say and how I move through the world as best I can. And it's a struggle every single day. But that's what I work on. And I think that's where I got to with my daughter. I miss her. I miss my grandsons. I haven't met one of them. And it's hard. You know, it's difficult. But you can't always pick who you want in your life. And, you know, I get back to my first boyfriend, and I had heartbreak with him, because when I finally did reunite with him, it wasn't to be. And it took me a super long time to go through that, what that meant. Because he was the thread that I had to the person that I actually was starting to like, which was myself. And it took me a really long time to get back to understanding that I was worth letting go all of the negatives that I took on as being myself. And I think that's where you get to peace. I think that's where you get to strength. I think that's where you get to clarity in your life. And once again, it's something I work on each and every day.
You know, earlier today, I was doing a bit of research on love and loss, and I came across Richard Bandler, one of the co-creators of NLP, with whom I studied many years ago. He said, you're supposed to feel loss when you lose somebody you really care about. And let's face it, whether we lose them through death or any other reason, mm-hmm. if we care about someone, to not have them in our life is a huge loss. Mm-hmm. And he says, all love stories will end in tragedy for one of them. It's just the nature. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a love story. And it's just that you get to the point of thinking more about what you love about the person rather than the tragedy of losing them. Are you at that place of thinking more about what you love about your daughter rather than the loss?
Yeah, you know, I think as a parent, and even though I didn't raise my daughter, I only hope for the best in her. And you know, she's going to have to find her own way, like, you know, all of us. And so I look at, we have gotten back to briefly talking or writing back to one another a little while ago, and that has recently stopped. But, you know, yes, to love from afar is a difficult one, but that's all I have. So that's what I get, you know, that's what I have to work on. So
now you started writing Letting Go Again, you know, as partly as your catharsis and to understand things. And of course, it's your personal story. But you said that in the writing of it, you began to develop a much larger vision. Will you tell us about that vision?
Oh, yes. Well, writing about your life, especially when it's something that everybody you know had a part in it, and it's a difficult decision to publish. And I wanted it to be a positive with my family and with my daughter. And so I started a foundation, and it's called the Hanai Foundation, which gets back to living in Hawaii. And the idea of Hanai is in Hawaii and Polynesia, especially in the Hawaiians, which is I'm more familiar with. The idea of family is really big. And Hanai is a way of including people into your family structure, or ohana. You know, it's like somebody's not your blood relative, they're your Hanai sister or something like that. So I love that idea of a big tent. And so I named my foundation the Hanai Foundation, and I'm presently working on working out a a place where I live for people to gather, a non-denominational, multi-generational place for people to say hello to one another and realize this idea of separation has got to stop, and that we're more connected, we're more similar than not. And I have a piece of land, and I'm currently working with the city to try to work out how to get to that point. But yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, you just said a word there that's really important in the context of what we've been talking about, and that is, you know, when it comes to loss, actually, we are all united. We never really lose someone. We might just lose, you know, the presence of them.
Yeah, there's all different ways of going through loss, and I think one of the major things that I've learned in my work through this amazing journey is that in writing my book and talking to wonderful people like you, Sandy, who allow me to talk about my journey, I've realized that so many people come up to me and say, you know, this is in my life. They feel safe talking to me, whereas, you know, maybe they wouldn't have if they didn't know I'd written this book and read my book. And so it's been such a miracle for somebody who was so shy about who I was for so long to get to a place in my life where I enjoy talking about how I navigated a very crooked path to where I am now, and finding the absolute gratitude in people being allowed to share their own stories, because we're all a little bit afraid of everyone knowing things we're not so proud of. And it really is a shame, because I think once you speak, that's what I've learned, once you start talking about it, people want you to hear their story. So it's great. It's been awesome.
You know, I just want to go back to clarify something, and that is the word hanai, which means to nourish, and the practice of that in Hawaii was that a child would be given by its parents to a trusted family member to raise, and that child was referred to as hanai. That is such a big and, you know, gift of love and trust. And it's a big gift of love to accept that as well. So I think, you know, this, what I'm coming to talking to you and having read your book, is that loss is inevitable, you know, but the love goes on and it can never be taken away from us. And in fact, you know, if we didn't love, we would never feel loss. So although it's a double-edged sword, there is a beauty in loss, in a sense, because it's a sign of how much we love.
Well, truly, yeah. I mean, it's always scary to open your heart truly and 100%, right? I mean, that vulnerability that you have in everyday friendships, even, and really, truly loving somebody for who they are is a big idea. In modern day, but hanai actually comes a little bit further back. I talked about the present day youth, but hanai was in old Hawaii. They didn't have written language, and so it was an honoring that the parents would come up to their parents with their grandchild and say, you know, is this child one that you would like to raise to bring them up? Because it was a way of keeping the traditions and the language alive in Hawaii. And it's interesting for me to think about the thought involved in adoption and in separation issues with all kinds of different foster kids. And there's so many different ways for people to be separated from their natural families. And I really wish we could find a different way of making it okay for the kids to walk that walk a little more. And I think growing up with an idea of hanai, which was all in love and allowing and no separation because the parents were still around, right? So I like that twist on the idea of adoption.
Well,
Before we bring the show to a close, I just want to let our listeners know that you are offering a free digital copy of Letting Go Again in PDF, EPUB or Mobi version. And if people would like to have a copy, all they have to do is send an email to info@lettinggoagain.com. Now, I know that you're not going to spam anyone. You're not going to do anything with those emails. You just want to share this book. What do you want people to gain from your book, Kim?
Oh, I think, you know, I think it's possible when you go through life and you have something that you're so ashamed of to get through to a place where you realize, you know, shame and guilt and regret and shoulda, coulda, woulda have no real useful place in present time, and to get to a place where I thought I could never get to, and as ungrateful as I was and how I got there, you know, I think a lot of people can look at their own ideas of their own journey and find something in my book that might give them a little bit of solace or hope that they too can get to a place.
Kimberly Smythe, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Sandy. I so appreciate it.
Thank you. You've been listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. You can get more information about Kim and the book at lettinggoagain.com. Don't forget that email address is info@lettinggoagain.com.
I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.